This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hello and welcome to Back of the Nest, the Palace Years. This time it's season 15-16, an FA Cup run, and both sides of Alan Pardew. We'll be back in just a moment.
Back of the Nest, the Palace Years.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Right, let me introduce my panel. For this one, I have Mr. Mike Scott.
Hello.
Hello. And I also have Mr. Patrick O'Connor.
Long time no speak, Christopher.
Yeah, it's been ages, isn't it?
A long time,
you know, you never do these Palace Year shows either. We never get you on for these.
Never.
So, no. Just by way of a little warm-up for me, but I just need to get this off my chest because I feel a little unsettled. So just before recording this, because I'm old now, I went for a little nap. So, and I was having one of those fairly vivid dreams that you have if you have a nap. And it's just a usual family day. The scene was I was at my parents' house and lots of extended family around. About halfway through the dream, I realized that they were all Chinese.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Who knows what that means, eh? Woke up before I figured out whether I was Chinese, but I wonder what it means. Is it that I fear the rise of the red dragon, do we think? Or
possibly.
Or perhaps I just shouldn't have eaten all that cheese. That might have been what it was.
I'm just gonna look up what that means on like Freud.com or something.
Yeah, and obviously if you've got any ideas listening to this and you want to get in touch, hi@backofthenest.com is the email address. Let me know what you think. Is it a political thing? Do I secretly want to be Chinese? Who knows? But just thought I would share that with you all. But as we always do in this, we start with the transfer business we did in the season itself, and it was a very interesting one. Not huge numbers into the club. I think over the last few seasons, you would have heard quite a lot of change in terms of personnel in and out of the squad, but fairly focused it was in this game. And obviously, we've just left a season 14-15 where Alan Pardew came in as the saviour, kept Palace in the league, actually took us to 10th position, and all sorts of optimism about the season ahead. And that was kind of furthered by the big signing of the summer, the marquee signing, the kind of player we really didn't think that we were going to get when it was first rumoured from Paris Saint-Germain. We signed Johan Kabay. Huge amount of excitement, Mike. And you know, what did you feel?
I remember thinking it was an absolute bargain, £10 million. I was pretty excited because it was one of those things, a bit like when Frank de Boer came in. Obviously, it didn't turn out that way, but it felt like something totally new for Palace. I don't think anyone was anything other than really excited. Just to let you know, by the way, to dream of Chinese people represents aspects of your personality that forego feeling good to achieve goals. Being uninterested or unbiased and a conservative view of a situation, so discipline. So you were dreaming of disciplined people around you. So I'm guessing someone at your work has pissed you off.
Yeah, almost definitely. Yeah, I will. I'll have a good think about that, Patrick.
Yeah, I initially liked the Kabay signing. I have to admit, I confused him a little bit at times with Hatem Ben Arfa because I remember them both being at Newcastle. I remember one match a few years ago, one of them ripped us a new one at Selhurst Park, and I realized now it wasn't Kabay that did it. It was Ben Arfa, wasn't it? But great reputation. Obviously, came from Newcastle, PSG. I mean, great player. And I was looking forward to him coming. I honestly think he underachieved slightly for us. We can get into that later on. But I do think I was very excited at the time for the signing indeed.
Well, I think, firstly, I think you were actually right. There was a game at Selhurst Park where I think Sissoko was pretty good as well for Newcastle. But Kabay really didn't run the show. Okay. He was head and shoulders above every other player on the pitch. He was absolutely superb. I think they do us 4-0 or something like that, 4-1.
4-1 it was.
I can remember a very smug Alan Pardew afterwards saying, "Oh, I think the Palace fans would have enjoyed watching my team." No, we didn't, Alan. And that is another reason. There's a reason why people don't like you, because you've got no self-awareness, have you? Anyway, plenty of time for that throughout the course of this show. For me, it was a massive, massive signing. We'd seen that, as you say. We'd seen him do that to us in recent memory. To go on, obviously, a really big money move to Paris Saint-Germain. At the time, he was, first choice central defensive midfielder for France. It was a massive, massive signing. He was never going to live up to that expectation, because I think a lot of people, you remember players like that in highlights if you're not watching them every week. So you remember him smashing in free kicks, which I don't think he ever got one for us. And you remember him hitting all these long-range goals and being a really, attacking player. But the player we bought was a sort of a deep-lying playmaker kind of player. I think people took a long, long time to adjust. There was all this talk that we're buying a number 10 and that's what we've needed for ages. And he wasn't that. But I think we know now when he went, we just missed him. And I think he brought a lot more to the team than people realise. But I completely agree with what you're saying, Patrick, in the fact that overall he did slightly underachieve at Palace, if you look at it in a general sense.
He had a decent goal return early on, though, didn't he? Because he was penalty taker. And I remember him feeling like he was a fairly reliable one as well. Let's have a look at how many goals he scored. So, 6 that season, and I think probably about 4 or 5 of those were penalties. But he certainly did seem to drift backwards in the team, back towards defensive midfield a bit more as the time went on.
Absolutely right. But so great start to the window. We also tried to solve our striker problem, didn't we, everyone? Tried to solve the old striker problem there by signing an exciting young player on loan from Chelsea. He'd been tearing up the Championship the season before, Championship Player of the Season. Exactly the sort of signing that everybody wanted to see. A young lad called Patrick Bamford.
See, I thought you were going to talk about Connor Wickham there. and I was about to come up with some great positivity about how he'd really impressed me in a Sunderland shirt, and you've cornered me with a Patrick Bamford.
I've introduced Bamford to the equation, and you're just reeling from it. Patrick, you're going to jump in first on that.
Yeah, I'm proud to say I saw Bamford play his last match for Crystal Palace. I flew over for the Christmas break and I saw him play against Chelsea and then leave right after that game, and he couldn't leave fast enough. He was a terrible signing. Terrible sign. It was one of the worst we've ever made. Terrible.
I mean, I just, it was pretty clear that he joined the club with an ego.
Exactly.
I think things had gone really well for him at Middlesbrough. And you don't mind a player with a bit of confidence, but you know, everything that we now know was that he never approached it with any kind of a work ethic. He saw himself as a Chelsea player who had gone out on loan and excelled, and this was the natural next step for him. And it was just going to be exactly as it was. It was going to be easy. He was going to walk into that team, score the goals. He was same as he was scoring last season in the division below. But as we've seen from so many strikers, it's such a different thing to score goals in the Championship than it is in the Premier League. And the very least you have to do for any club, but especially for Palace fans, is put the effort in, not wander around like a haircut on legs. It was just absolutely, it was traumatising to watch him even attempt to play football at times.
And when he left, he was a bitter man, wasn't he? I can't remember which one out of him and Adebayor. One of them said that joining Palace was the worst thing they ever did in their career. And the other one said that they like hated every minute of it. I can't remember which one was. I think Adebayor said it was the worst decision, and Bamford just said he couldn't stand being there. Yeah, what a bastard.
Yeah. Well, you know, ringing endorsements there, but I think both those players have to kind of look inward rather than at the club. I mean, Bamford went on to sign on loan for Norwich and was similarly awful in the Premier League and had to drop a division to do anything. And, you know, now most people hate him in general anyway, because of his cheating at Leeds last. I've put time in there, but he, whilst on loan at Leeds, he cheated. There you go. But awful, awful loan signing. Got to be up there with some of the worst signings we've ever brought into the club. And I don't blame the club for that. There was every reason to think that that was a good thing to do. Big reputation, had proved himself at Championship level. And you really would expect a player of who had just had a season like that to really want to push on, not just to turn up and expect it. Hugely disappointing. Another disappointing situation happened. We signed Alex McCarthy. Sort of that period where we were constantly looking for a new number one to replace Wayne Hennessy. Alex McCarthy was chosen by Pardew and the club. I think his first ever game was against Palace for Reading. I'm pretty sure that's true. I saw him as a very young keeper and joined us. And I think unfairly treated badly by Alan Pardew, I think it's fair to say. Went on to do very well at Southampton, although lost his place after England recognition. But looked relatively solid for us, but then a couple of mistakes. I forget exactly the game it was where he had that absolute horror past Liverpool. And he was hung out to dry for that and never given another opportunity. Yeah,
that is the one signing I'm the most upset about during Alan Pardew's era. He started against Norwich the first match. And I thought he did really well in the first few games. We actually got off the very good start that season. And again, that little match, and I think someone, you guys probably know better now, it was a home match. Someone said to me, did they water the pitch at halftime? Because apparently that's what caused that error that he made. He was a slip of some kind that happened. That's why they scored that goal that beat us. And I just think that, you said, he was so unfairly treated by Pardew. And the look in retrospect, had we kept him, just, you know, fought through that, he'd have been our goalkeeper through all these, you know, Dwayne Hennessy times. And just think about how what he's done with Southampton to get back in the England squad. So I just think he was treated very, very poorly by Pardew. And I think that was a major error as far as our goalkeeping situation goes.
It was just an odd thing to kind of take the pressure that the team were under after, you know, I think a couple of dodgy results, but to just kind of impart that onto one player rather than to kind of accept that mistakes will happen with a goalkeeper. You're not going to get a reaction. You know, when you give a player a shirt and say, you know, you're my number one. If they make one mistake and you take him straight out, that can ruin them. And he, you know, that's why he could never put him back in after he did that. He kind of, you know, made his own bed kind of thing. And yeah, we're the ones who lost out, in my view.
The odd thing about it was that he didn't really play for QPR very much at all. When we bought him, he hadn't been their keeper. So it must have been something that Pardew saw in him. Because obviously at the time, this was pre-Dougie era, wasn't it? So we hadn't got, you know, the sporting director looking for stuff. So I presume it was Pardew's decision to sign him. So it just seemed really odd. And the fact that he went off to have such a great time at Southampton just rubbed it in.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there was a scouting network. We had, I've forgotten his surname now, Tim something. Went on to Brighton in the end. But yeah, so we had a head scout. We had the the fabled database, which was you know, almost trying to do the money ball kind of thing, which is why we were identifying a lot of our signings. But it was the, you know, for me it was the right player, but just the wrong manager, I guess. But you know, these things happen. You know, not every signing works out, but it is definitely a what if kind of signing. Another what if kind of signing at the end was we brought in Connor Wickham, player that had been linked with us a couple of times, and I can remember talking to Steve Parrish on one of the shows. I think it was the season before, in the January window, when we were talking about trying to get a striker in, and I think we asked him the question, and he said, "Well, who?" I can remember saying, "Well, you know, we're linked with Connor Wickham," and he said at the time then that we were interested in Wickham from Sunderland, but they weren't willing to sell. But we got our man before the season kicked off, and again another exciting player, was extremely well regarded as a 16-year-old. He was thought of as the best striker in youth football. I can recall him tearing our youth team apart playing for Ipswich. And the club really sort of stood up and took notice then. Big money move to Sunderland, where quite often he was played wide left instead of as a striker, but had all the attributes to be a very, very top player. Again, I was really excited with this one.
And I was too. And I remember one particular season, he kept them up by themselves, Sunderland. He scored about 4 or 5 goals in a stretch. I remember they beat Man City in a very important match for them. So he was, I thought it was a really good signing for us. Like you said, he was at the right age, young. Again, you said he played out wide for Sunderland. I was hoping we'd play more central, which we have done. And he's a big, strong young lad. And I thought it was a good signing for us. The only problem, obviously, has been his injuries. But I've liked him. And I remember the season before, he scored in that game when Yannis scored the hat-trick. He scored a goal against us. So
yeah,
I thought it was a very good signing. Yeah, exactly. I thought it was a good player. Really good signing.
Yeah, just to make point of order, Mikey's reminded me it was Tim Coe was the scout, the head scout at the time.
Correct.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Well done. But yeah, I think what was weird about Wickham is that he hadn't really had a terrible injury record, but he joined with a reputation of having a terrible injury record for some reason. Because I can remember looking at it at the time, everyone was like, "Oh, we've signed an injury-prone striker," and he'd had one quite serious injury, but other than that, there was nothing in his history to kind of suggest it. There's one of those things where it became a self-fulfilling prophecy. Everyone said he was an injury-prone striker, and then he became one. But obviously, that has really affected his career at Palace. But he had a pretty strong season for us this year. Not huge numbers of goals, obviously, but you know, built up a bit of form and was looking a really good buy for us at one stage. We also signed Bakary Sakho. Big reputation at Wolves. I can remember something, I think it was Terence that said it actually, who said he's got a world-class left foot and a championship rest of him. And I kind of think that sums Sakho up a bit. But he made a huge impact when we initially signed him. I think the Chelsea game in particular sticks in my mind, where he sort of turned the game in our favour.
Also scored against Villa early in the season, game winning against Villa also.
Absolutely right. So he was very direct. That's the thing with him, and that's what he brought to the team at the time. It was something we really needed at the time as well. A player who was just willing to have a shot. I can remember watching us pass the ball around, and it was just the crowd was sort of screaming "shoot" in ever sort of increasingly desperate voices through most of this season. And bringing him in really sort of gave us someone who was prepared just to have a pop. And it's amazing how much of a difference that made at times. Well, Steve, very quickly through... Oh, sorry, Mike, go on.
Oh, it's all right. I was just going to say, it's weird how it's someone else's money, but it always bothers me so much. So we pick up a free transfer and they look good after a few games and impress me, and it just makes me like them a lot more. And I was confused at the time, considering how much Wolves fans absolutely adored Sakho, how we managed to get him. And it didn't take long for me to absolutely fall in love with him.
Absolutely right. And look, he fell out of favour again because of the injuries, but there was a spell in the later season, which I'm sure we'll cover again, where I think it was the season after, wasn't it, where he just became a real fans' favourite for getting some really important goals at important times, played as an auxiliary striker. But it was more that he just had seemed to have that, plays with a smile on his face, and he would just come and celebrate with the fans. And you know, it was just one of the things as a player that seemed to really enjoy having a connection with the support. And that was definitely something that he had at Wolves, as you rightly observed, Mike. So in January, we had three incomings. We'll talk about the big one in a moment. Freddie Ladapo, who's now come, last season at the time of recording, did very, very well at Plymouth and has signed for Rotherham now. So he might be heading back up the leagues. But that was a non-league signing. Had started at Colchester, I believe. A bit of promise, dropped out into non-league, and we just took another punt, which we like to do every now and then, see if a free-scoring non-league striker, see if we can pick up a Jamie Vardy. Haven't quite managed it yet, but always worth a punt. Emmanuel Adebayor, we've mentioned already, but I'm going to go on record now saying I liked Emmanuel Adebayor. I didn't think it would work, certainly in the sense that I didn't think he was going to turn up and be the Adebayor of Arsenal and Man City standard. But we didn't really have anything at the time, anyone who was scoring any goals. And I can vividly remember the first couple of games he played for us. And I remember him scoring a header as well, which was a really decent header. But he actually played as a striker. He stood up front. He occupied the areas you want a striker to occupy. And at least we had someone who was playing up top that if we gave him an opportunity, they might put it away. I suppose with hindsight, I was being overly optimistic, but I kind of like that we tried.
Yeah, you know what? You're right. Because I was assuming up until this second when you said that I always thought Adebayor was a bell end. But it actually, when he came in and everyone from other clubs said, don't touch him with a barge pole, I was actually really happy. And when he scored, I think he scored one in a defeat against Watford. That was probably his only goal. I was like, yes, yes. And then when we beat Spurs in the cup, and there was just sort of meme of him doing the rounds with a smile on his face. I was like, yes, this is the Palace cheeky bloke we all want. And then it fell apart. So I've just rewritten history in my head to think that I couldn't stand him. But yeah, you're right. At the time, it was like, awesome, Adebayor.
Yeah, and I maintain it. A lot of people would have done exactly as you did, and I've done it myself as well. Kind of that rewritten history. I always knew it was ridiculous signing, but it wasn't. It was worth a punt in my view, and that initial impact, it looked like it could work, but it didn't.
Yeah, and I know people looking for goals from Adebayor because that's his background. But if you think about it, as Mike just mentioned, during that cup run, he was very instrumental in a lot of goals that we scored during that cup run. He was instrumental in the Tottenham match Mike mentioned. I misspoke last time, but the Reading quarterfinal he played well in. And I thought he did well. I was there at the Watford game. I thought he did well when he came in late, kind of helped us, keep that 2-1 lead. So I think, yeah, the goals weren't there, but performances overall, I thought he actually put himself about pretty well and did a decent job for us. Again, people just looked at the Adebayor for Man City and also expected us to have him, but that was never going to happen. So as a punt, I think it wasn't great, but it wasn't as bad as people make it out to
be. Yeah, absolutely. People talk about it like it was one of our worst signings ever and an absolute joke. But the reality was he was certainly no worse than a lot of the strikers we had over this period, really.
Yeah, but you come out after you've left to say it was your worst decision you ever made.
Yeah,
you're not going to end up being too high in people's opinions, are you?
No, absolutely right. Now, and again, I didn't really remember that quote until he said it, and it's I can kind of understand it in a way, in the sense that we weren't a team struggling like we were in the league this year, as of course we'll be getting into, wasn't the environment for a big reputation player to come and restore his reputation. Let's face it, it's not like he started every match either, and that would have certainly got on his nerves, because I reckon he would have signed assuming that he would play every game because of his reputation as well. So there was definitely a mismatch there. But the big signing, of course, in January was Randall Williams. Mike, really, you desperately want to talk about. He looked like a sort of emaciated Sean Scannell. And brought him from, was it Tower Hamlets, I think it was.
He had quite the pedigree coming into Palace. He had played no appearances for any side of note whatsoever. Got him from Tower Hamlets. He's now at Exeter, though, so he has gone on to carry on with a professional career. So fair play to Randall.
Absolutely right, and I'm being slightly facetious. I saw him play a couple of games. I remember him scoring a few goals for the under 23s, but get another punt from non-league to see what we got. And he did go to Watford afterwards before ending up at Exeter via loans at Wickham.
Yeah, we've tried that a few times and it's never worked out, but you got to give the club credit for at least trying. But the thing I don't like about those efforts, we don't really give those players any real chance. You stick him out in 23s and that's it. Because I remember Williams when he signed, they talked about him being a wide player. You know, maybe he could come in and do a job like Wilf or like Yannick. And he never made an appearance for the first team, obviously. And I don't remember him having that many appearances for the 23s. I remember, again, Apaya we tried that with, and Freddie Ladapo we tried it with, which we've done it about 4 or 5 times, but we've never actually given that player an opportunity. We're trying, like you just mentioned, Chris, we're trying to find the next Jamie Vardy without actually giving that player, you know, any first appearances, which is a little bit strange for me.
Well, Ladapo, I mean, he came from Margate, and, there was big talk about him. You know, they took a punt and he didn't cost anything. But I think he was scoring he scored an absolute shed ton of non-league goals. Because of the state we were in with strikers, I think he did actually play a couple of games.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember who he played against now. But yeah, he started a game, I think. I think I'm right in saying.
Yeah, I'm sure he did, yeah.
But anyway, there's a whole host of outs. I'm gonna read them just because I like to. And there's a couple in there that we'll dwell on, but not huge amounts. We'll come back to the sort of main one I want to talk about. But out of the club were Shola Amiobi, Sonny Black, Michael Chambers, who we took from Dulwich, again, another non-league punt with a reputation, was scouted by Man United, but didn't really work out. I think we ended up sending him back. Shauniki Clement Peters, lovely name. Bradley Cummins, Kyle De Silva, promised an awful lot, Palace fan. Eventually, we had to let him go. Injuries really sore to him at Palace. Morgan Ferrier, Owen Garvin finally left long after Ian Holloway, as he predicted. Jamal Howlett-Mundell, Elliot List, who's who'd had a little bit of attention in the media and for Gillingham in the cup fairly recently. Kai Martin, Lewis Price, the Welsh goalkeeper. Peter Ramage went Rambo. We talked about Rambo earlier on in this series and what an amazing man and player he is. Gus Sal, I want to mention him. He was really hugely tipped for big things at Palace as a youngster. I can vividly remember the injury that saw to that in a non-league game that Ben Nagle and I were commentating on. Played at Tooting and Mitcham. I can't remember the opposition, whether it was Tooting and Mitcham or not, I'm not sure. But yeah, took a bad injury there, never really recovered. Now plays non-league and coaches at Palace. Jerome Thomas finally went, Barry Bannon went, Adeline Guediora went, Glenn Murray, of course, went. Might come back to that one. Fizeo Adarabayo, I'll just put that in there to make me have to say it. Jack Hunt finally went in January without playing a game. So we'll talk a little bit about Glenn Murray in a sec. But I also want to mention the fact Mandela Egbo chose to go and join Borussia, I think it was Borussia Mönchengladbach. And he's just at the time of recording signed for a second tier German club after not making a breakthrough there. Now, he was very highly rated as a right back and just took that. You could call it brave, or you could call it unwise, because he was pushing, he was training with the first team, potentially pushing to get some kind of recognition there. You know, if he had stayed, and I suppose this is the question really, if he had stayed and carried on that trajectory, we might never have seen Aaron Wan-Bissaka end up as a right back. He might have ended up being released as a winger who wasn't quite going to make it. And Patrick, couldn't things have been very different?
100% agree with you. It's a great point. I remember seeing an interview on Palace TV with Mandela Egbo prior to him obviously leaving, and he talked about, you know, training with the first team and his hope for the future. He was under, I think, 17 in the international, played a bunch of tournaments for England. But you're absolutely right. I think had he stayed, we would never have heard of Wan-Bissaka, because he was touted. Everybody heard about Egbo. Wan-Bissaka was a winger at the time, was a forward. So who knows what would have happened. But it's interesting because I think at that time he was probably being held back by Water, obviously. And I think he actually said at the time he left, they just didn't see a future at Palace because of the fact that they had got a decent right back in Joel Warden. You know, the avenues to get to the first team are kind of hard. So it's a shame. I give him credit for the punt that he took. I feel bad for him now because I don't think he would have wanted to end up in the second tier of German football right now. I think he would be pushing right now to play in the Bundesliga. But I got to give him credit. At the age that he left that and where he was, it was a huge punt on his part. And I hope it works out for him.
Am I wrong in thinking, from what I remember, it was kind of more his choice than the club's?
Yeah, oh, definitely. Yeah, he was offered a contract but chose not to sign it. And he was one of the first of a glut of young players who have done that and continue to do that now, which is it's an interesting tactic by some of the Bundesliga clubs to try and take some of the higher rated English young players who might not be getting an opportunity as perhaps as early as they might in Germany. But as we say, it didn't quite work out for him, but certainly an interest. He's still young enough to have a very good career. But I think it's just, from the point of view of, one decision from him potentially changing Aaron Wan-Bissaka's life and Palace's finances and performances it's just amazing how things all link.
He's only 21. He'll be 22 in August, so he's still very, very young. He's got a huge future ahead of him, I'm sure, hopefully.
Hopefully, yeah. So, Glenn Murray, we won't spend a huge amount of time talking about this. We've done a good half hour on transfers already, but we couldn't not mention it. So at the time, obviously, sold to Bournemouth for good money. So let's first of all state the obvious, which is Alan Pardew wasn't going to give him opportunities. I think we spoke to Peter Ramage around the time as well, and he said, well, Glenn wanted to play. That was his sole motivation, and that's he wanted to leave Palace because he knew he wasn't going to be picked. At the time, I thought, Glenn had come back and done pretty well in some games, but still wasn't looking like the player he was prior to the injury. And I thought to get relatively good money for him at the time from Bournemouth was great for the club and great for him as well to go and get a good cup, 2-3 year contract at his age with that recent injury to go and play elsewhere at the top level. I just thought it worked brilliantly for everybody. And it's funny how things turn out sometimes, isn't it? Obviously, didn't really do tremendously well at Bournemouth, although scored a couple of key goals, including a winner against Man United. But ended up going, obviously, back to Brighton and playing a year in the Championship where he really found that form again. And at 34, 35, is still a goal-scoring Premier League striker. So, yeah, quick, how do we feel about that, Mike and Patrick?
It sounds like I was more gutted than you at the time. Obviously, we'd got in Connor, but I felt like he was always quite a streaky striker and just, to have a bad run was not reason to stop playing him or to get rid of him. And 4 million seemed... Obviously, he was getting on, but 4 million seemed like it wouldn't help us in the same way as he would. And certainly by the end of the season and by the start of the next season, when we were struggling to score, it really felt like it was a poor decision. And I think he did all right at Bournemouth as well. So, I it wasn't so much mixed feelings. I was quite disappointed.
I remember reading on the message boards how people were up in arms about it. And at the time, I honestly wasn't as upset about it, because we had Wickham, and I really like the possibility of Wickham coming and doing good things here. But it didn't work out. And in retrospect, it was one of the worst things we could have done, not necessarily because of Glenn Murray, what he did before, but the fact he went on to Brighton and did so many good things with them. I think that's what bothered me more than anything else. But again, at the time, I'm going to be totally honest, I wasn't that bothered by it. I just really thought that, he was injured, and like, though Pardew to me never gave him a chance to get back from the injury and prove himself, I was like, okay, we got X amount. I think Mike just said 4 million for him. I thought that was a decent amount of money from Bournemouth. If we go to Bournemouth and basically go away and stay there forever, that would be fine. But then having to go to Brighton and basically bounce back and do what he did for us, that's the part that's gutting to me. It really is.
But for me, I know I still maintain this, and I got some grief for maintaining this for a long period of time. But without him dropping a division, I don't think he would ever have recovered to the level he has now. I might be wrong in that, but that's how I feel about it. Because obviously, as we'll get into, we didn't miss him for the first half of the season. And he was on and off the bench at Bournemouth. And, we were doing fine. So it didn't feel like a bad decision at that time. It's only It's only when you let a certain amount of time pass that it ended up being a terrible error for exactly the reasons you say, Patrick, in the fact that he went on and made Brighton a better team. And as you say, Mike, for the money we got for him, he would have done more good than the £4 million did. But what I will say is, whoever your manager is and however they turn out, if the manager doesn't want a player and the manager wants a player sold, you know, you've really got to try to back your manager. I'm glad we didn't back Pardew in every decision that he wanted to make, because there was a strong suggestion that he wanted to sell Wilfried Zaha for about £15 million to Tottenham. So I'm glad he didn't get to do that. But at the same time, you know, the board have got to look at what the manager wants to do. And that's what they did.
Well, just the other one more point quickly. I know we've gone on about transfers for ages, but at the time, Bournemouth seemed like the most direct, equal standing team as a competition in the Premier League. So it seemed it was the extra thing of us losing a player that had been so influential to us to a team that were probably our most direct rivals in terms of quality is probably what stung more.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But again, I guess we weren't to know exactly how things were going to turn out. But you're right. Anyway, so we went into pre-season, and I think most of it was local friendlies. Although we did have a trip to Europe, went on a European tour to play Union Berlin, where we lost 2-0. But not a huge amount to talk about in terms of pre-season. But
no,
it was an incredible.
Correct. We went to South Africa.
Did we?
Yeah. The Cape Town Cup, no?
I have completely forgotten about the Cape Town Cup. That existed. You're absolutely right.
We're in South Africa, yeah.
Wow. Hang on a second. The Cape Town Cup, that has blown my mind.
You did, right? You did, right? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Or was that not the next
year? Was it this season? No, because the season after we went to America.
Was it?
I think we went to America the season after.
We beat Supersport 4-0 and we lost to Lisbon. Sport Lisbon 2-0 in the final. I remember it. I'm looking at it too. That helps, but
okay.
I've got to look it up
because I can't make a statement like that and then not follow up with some facts. But no, we actually went to South Africa, played Supersport United from South Africa, beat them 4-0, and then we lost in the final to Sport Lisbon 2-0.
Okay, I remember going to the Fulham game, and that's the only one that sticks in my mind.
Did you 1-0 in that game?
Yeah, and there was more Palace fans there than there was Fulham fans. I remember that.
The Cape Town Cup. Well, there you go. That had completely left my mind. So obviously, I put a lot of importance into that one. Wow. Mind blown. But there we go. But let's move on. It was an amazing start for Palace. We opened with a 3-1 away win at Norwich, as we talked about when we talked about Johan Cabaye. He scored in that game to sort of kind of set the excitement levels to a kind of feverish level. In the opening 8 games, we lost to Arsenal, Man City and Spurs only, which you can kind of understand. We beat Villa, we beat Chelsea, Watford and West Brom. And after the West Brom game, we were third in the table. Blassie scored in the second half and Cabaye with a last minute penalty. And we sat there behind Manchester City with 18 points and Man United with 16 points. And little old Palace sitting there in third, 15 points. Incredibly exciting start to the season. And, I mean, it didn't stop there, gents. We had a little wobble, lost a couple of games, West Ham and Leicester. Managed a 0-0 draw with Man United and obviously beating Liverpool 2-1 at Anfield. We still had the... We were their bogey side, weren't we? And a late goal from Scott Dan, if you remember rightly. I think it was Blassie with the first. Coutinho scored just before half-time. But Dan, second attempt, if I remember. He had a little header, didn't he? It was blocked and he headed it back in again. Exciting times.
Just quickly go back to the very first game, because I did ask some listeners to tell us about their best memories from that season. So Benj on Twitter said, Cabaye goal, Norwich away, first game of the season, glorious sun, unreal away day. And those are the kind of days that you're a Palace fan for, aren't they?
Absolutely right. And things just felt so good at the time. We'd obviously finished with a brilliant run of form the season before, and it just felt like it was coming together. We'd signed some real quality, and the evidence was there. It wasn't like we were up there for a couple of games. We were staying up there. I was getting very, very carried away. I won't tell you the bet I put on at the time that obviously I then lost, but I was very, very excited.
All right, so I want to refute this myth going around the internet via Naveed Khan that I was the cause of our wobble. You just said that we lost after going to sixth place, beating Tony Pulis's side. We then lost to West Ham and Leicester. I say our wobble began then. Yes, we bounced back, United 0-0 and beat Liverpool, but then we lost to Sunderland. Remember the Sunderland game, Defoe? So don't tell me it's my fault. I'm not having it. I'm not having this.
We'll have a look at how the results went when you came over and saw us. We'll have a look at those in just a minute, just to examine the facts. That's all we're going to look at, Patrick. We're going to look at the facts. We got back on track with that draw and against Man United and the win at Anfield. Obviously, that defeat to Sunderland you mentioned, Jermaine Defoe always does it against us, doesn't he? We can't help scoring against us. But a good strong run of results after that. We beat Newcastle 5-1, which was, I'm sure, glorious for Alan Pardew, and a real sort of shift from the 4-1 we talked about previously, with us having Kabai in the side. Obviously, draw against Everton, beat Southampton, and then a magical day, Patrick, where Palace... Oh, sorry, Mike wants to jump in. Sorry, Mike.
Yeah, I just feel you're overlooking something very important earlier on in the season. That 2-1 win away at Chelsea. Joel Ward's goal. They don't come very often. I think we need to just have a minute to remember that the winner against Chelsea came...
Diving header.
Joel Ward. What a man.
He just ended up in the box for no apparent reason. But that's when we were talking about Sacco earlier on. He turned that game massively. And I can remember watching Joel Ward's run at the time. I watched that game, I think a bunch of us were at Lucy White, formerly of this parish's house at the time, watching that game in absolute disbelief. And I was wondering what on earth Joel Ward was doing, but he sort of started a slow jog and he just carried on moving. No one picked him up at all. And it just ended up being able to nod that one in. But you're right to bring that up. It was glorious. So I want to talk, Patrick, about the Stoke game, because you watched that, didn't you, in the old New York there. So first of all, we know we won 2-1, but it was a great way to win a game, first and foremost, wasn't it?
Fantastic way to win a game. I venture to the Football Factory probably once a month to watch a game. And at that match, I was lucky enough to meet the great Sam.
Producer Sam. So you've avoided saying her surname like I often do, because I think it's Clacker,
right,
isn't it?
Samantha Clacker.
Which are the things that you put on the wheels of kids' bikes that make a noise. I did say that. If I was her, I'd pronounce it cliche. But that's just me. But anyway, yeah, you got to meet producer Sam.
And her husband, Adam. And the thing that was funny about it is that she recognized me. I'm not sure how. She kind of walked over to me and said, "Are you Patrick from the back of..." No, it was Holmes at Radio back then. I said, "Yes." And then we got into a nice conversation. She was very, very nice, very friendly. And then after that happened, she ended up becoming a producer based on that conversation of loving the show. She was a very big fan and she contacted Mike, etc. But the game was a great game. Obviously, the way it ended. I mean, the goal by Chung Yung Lee. What do they call that? They say limbs. Is that what you guys call it when things like that happen?
It was limbs at the
football factory that day. Among the tennis boys. It was a lot of fun. A lot of beers getting thrown up in the air. And it was great. The only bad thing was that so Yannick got hurt in the celebration, which was disappointing and upsetting for me as a big Yannick fan. But yeah, it was a great win. And that took us up to, I guess we were in sixth place at that point. We were rolling.
Yeah, we were absolutely. You've got to remember, this was on the 19th of December.
Yeah.
So this was our last game before Christmas.
And then something very bad happened.
Something very bad happened after
that. Can I just say,
I always love the last minute goals or very, very late goals. That's what it's not the only thing that keeps me watching football, keeps me going to games, but it's like the lifeblood to me. There's something that goes in your mind. You talk about limbs, but I never get when I see fans of other clubs scoring late goals and just politely clapping. The only appropriate action is to just run somewhere, just flailing your arms about and screaming. And then, you know, you're not really supposed to get your self-awareness back for a good, I'd say 90 seconds minimum is my standard. So, you know, that I think that's how you can sort proper fans from just, you know, regular watchers of football. You know, a proper fan will not be able to physically control themselves at the sight of a last-minute goal. But you're right, Patrick. So following that, on Boxing Day, we drew against Bournemouth, the 0-0. And that was followed up by a game you watched, Patrick, wasn't it?
Correct. I actually met you in the... Oh, gosh, where do you guys sit?
Arthur Waite.
In the Arthur Waite. I met you, Lucy. We sat in the back. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. My friend Will came over too. That was a lot of fun. My son was there. And we got a point against Swansea, which is why I will state again, it wasn't me that caused this demise of Crystal Palace. But what happened the next match, the game against Chelsea, was an absolute disgrace. That game was awful. I mean, honestly, I've yet to see a worse display by Crystal Palace at home. That was really, really bad. We were manhandled. We were destroyed. We just played really poorly that game. And the only thing I remember out of the game was that at the end of that game, well, actually, one good thing was John Yester got a chance to get into the game, which is brilliant to see him play live. But was at the end of the game, Bamford basically just said he wasn't coming back to Palace. Left us, went back.
I was devastated by that. Yeah, really upset about that. But no, look, we obviously, you know, after the Swansea point that you witnessed, you know, that good, great point.
Yes, thank
definitely
you.
Not great a turning point in the season. Yeah. Excellent point. Nothing was ruined there. But after that point, we're going into the January window and you're thinking, We are still pushing top six here. We've got a real chance here. And we're going into a window where we can address any of the minor issues that we've got. Can't we, right? You know, we probably need maybe get another decent striker in, something like that. Just add something to the squad, change those faces. We've got a real chance to kick on here. European tour, that's what we're all thinking. And then the curse of Patrick. No, I'm kidding. It fell apart.
You forget the FA Cup run, don't you? That came. You forget the FA Cup run. It's not fair.
I mean, but by the time the Watford game came about, I remember thinking when we lost 2-1, and I think that was the game that Adebayor scored one, but I think we were already 2-0 down as from what I can remember. I actually went into the game thinking we're no longer capable of winning. And looking back at the list now, it was still another six games before we got a win. So they were dark times. I mean, that was as dark a time as the seven game losing streak at the start of the season a couple of years later. Dark times. And the FA Cup just made it worse because you're like, well, we can play, but why is... What has Pardew done to make it that he only seems to care about a knockout competition? And that they were dark days.
It's the sort of thing where you think that something psychological has happened here. I also think fitness was a real factor as well. I think the players' condition, something was up with the training. I'm convinced of that because the players' condition was awful. Players were struggling. We were sort of picking up bookings left, right, and centre because people seemed to be making very, very tired challenges all the time. We didn't look the same team. But, you know, you sort of mentioned it there, Mike. From the win against Stoke, which was the 19th of December 2015, we didn't win another league match until the 9th of April 2016. That is just incredible to after being pushing top six for your form to dip just to that level. It was horrific.
At the time, the Villa match, Tuesday, January 12th, I'm going to bring it up because I think it was a turning point. I want to know why we didn't change our goalkeeper after this match. There was a goal, the game that the ball went through our goalkeeper's legs. That would be Wayne Hennessy, Jordan Escott header. It went through his legs and we lost 1-0 away. And I contend that we never got any confidence after that. Chelsea was just a bad game, I'll give it that. But from that game in January 12th, league-wise, we just didn't have any good performances as a team. And I think a lot of it had to do with our, poor play.
Well, I think when you look at how McCarthy was treated yep. in terms of making yep. an error, the Hennessy error was every bit as bad. And unfortunately, there wasn't a consistent approach to that. But I mean, you know, that it, obviously it's one game, but that was an opportunity to stop a run. But that actually, we just obviously lost to Chelsea. But after that followed another three defeats after the Villa defeat. It was, you know, five defeats on the bounce before we got another point against Swansea, and then another two on the bounce, and then a point, and then another two on the bounce, and that was, It would be less bewildering, as Mike says, if it wasn't for the fact that we were winning in the cup. And so we had 0 points in January. In February, we got 1 point in that draw with Swansea. On winning that point, we were still in 12th place, but we're now 13 points of fourth, where we were sitting level just before Christmas. And we were only 9 points outside the relegation zone. And obviously, the only bright spark in that whole period was when Martin Kelly became Gareth Bale, just sauntered up the wing to smash in the ball at White Hart Lane to take Palace further in the FA Cup. But again, 1 point in March. The entire of March, we've got three months and we've taken two league points. And this point in March was from Sunderland. And I mean, I didn't know what to think at the time. I think March the 19th, the Leicester game, we were 16th. And 8 points clear of the drop. And yes, brilliant. We had the FA Cup semi-final to look forward to. Quarter-final against Reading. And yeah, we won that game. And as much as Fraser Campbell tried his absolute best to miss scoring from essentially on the goal line, we still won that game 2-0 and went into the next round of the Cup. But, you know, I think we're heading towards, without talking about the FA Cup, with the league, we're heading towards a pivotal point. And we had what was an absolutely crucial period of time. We just lost to Leicester, as I said. We went into April and we managed to avoid defeat for four games in a row. Only one of them was a win, but what a game it was. What an emotional moment against Norwich City, 1-0. And Patrick, it was Jason Puncheon. And what will stick in the memory of any Palace fan who was there or saw it for a long, long period of time, just the absolute raw emotion that kind of fell out of him as he ran off celebrating that. It's still to this day my screensaver on my laptop. It was just a proper Palace moment.
It was, and the commentator's quote is punching, it's beautiful. It's great. It really was. And the emotion is what I love about that man. And I know people have criticized punching for other things, but if you want to go back and look at the record, he is so responsible for keeping us up for every season bar last year. He was part of the big part of the team. He would always score crucial goals down the stretch and keep us up. And that Norwich goal was the one that kept us up, because, you know, you're talking about us being on such a terrible, terrible winless streak. If we don't beat Norwich, I mean, the pressure we're going to be under, you know, going to those last few matches would have been immense. So no, Jason Puncheon, a hero of mine, you know, one of our own, love him to death. And I mean, again, I just love the emotion. You know, he basically started crying after he scored that goal. We're going to see similar emotion from him in the cup final later on, but that emotion that he showed was absolutely brilliant. I just love the man. Just love him.
Yeah, and that's Sorry.
You're totally right about the pressure. I'd forgotten. I remember it being like a proper pressure cooker that day, but it's because we had Everton, Arsenal, United as the next three games. Yeah. And, you know, I remember chatting with people at work who were saying, well, there's no way you're going down. And I was like, "What? There's a big, big way." You know, it's weird because it's a season where we actually were never, it's the only season we were never in the bottom three at any point in the season.
Exactly.
But that's really weird because it was probably one of the most stressful seasons.
I think for me, first of all, just, you know, as a supporter of a club, as a fan of a club, you want to see players with that level of emotion. But to get to your point, Mike, you're absolutely spot on. The run we had was terrible after that. And I think without winning that game, we probably don't get the point against Arsenal that that really sort of cemented things that assured our safety. And, you know, it's worth noting as well, we only won one of the last four games as well, which was the penultimate game of the season, again against Stoke to do the double over them. But after the Arsenal game, you know, Pardew came out and said, because let's put it this way, any manager without that cup run, you'd have to have sacked him for that appalling run. There's no way you could go win two games for the rest of the season or three games for the rest of the season after being in the top half, near the top six at Christmas, and not, you know, there's no excuse for that. To not be able to arrest that slide, to not be able to do something different, to keep putting the team out and losing in the same way continuously, it was absolutely unforgivable. But he started rolling the excuses out against Arsenal. He said, the cup run has affected us, but I think we've put that to bed. We can't keep leaning on that. We need to focus on the league. I think the players have taken that message on board. And hopefully we can pick something up against Manchester United. Well, we didn't. But, you know, he's there admitting that the cup run affected us. But it's his job to stop that happening. And let's face it, we're talking about January through to April without a win. It was only three games in the cup, wasn't it, in that period? What on earth are those? You know, when we're playing Tottenham, the players aren't at that point thinking, oh, I must focus on the cup because we're going to be in the final here, are they? You know, it's another in the long line of really weak Pardew excuses.
I don't want to put a spoiler in for the next episode, but he did only win six games the entire calendar year of 2016, so it didn't get any better after the FA Cup. You know, there was another 7 months that he had to have an excuse for. But I remember at the time, it's again this rewriting history, I wasn't of the opinion that I wanted him out at all. I just thought he was a streaky manager and he won as many games as he lost, and it took me a long time to change that.
Fair enough, Mike, because if you look at Newcastle record, he was very streaky. But, you know, what Chris said before, Holloway and Warnock lost their jobs for a lot less than what Pardew did during that streak. A lot
Absolutely.
Less.
So, yeah.
I mean, the person worst was De Boer. Obviously, you know, De Boer's record was hideous. But again, so from that standpoint. But if I think about the whole thing with the cup run, is that, think back for a second. We did not even use our first team squad for a lot of those early round matches. The Stoke match, don't think we used our first team squad. The Tottenham game, we definitely did not. I know Tottenham, for a fact, used a very undermanned squad. We used Kelly. I mean, Kelly started that match and scored the goal. So, you know, it affected us, but it's not like we're using all of our first team players in both the league and the cup. It just happened to be when we got to the Watford match and Reading. Sorry, by the Reading game, we started using our first team. We just saw a chance to get to the cup final, which makes total sense. But that excuse is very poor, that the pressure of the FA Cup, because he didn't take it seriously until we got past Tottenham. He
didn't. I think it's really... Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think it's really interesting that you know we bring up the streaky manager kind of stuff, because he was on record a number of occasions as basically saying that was normal.
Yeah,
he thought that was a normal. He said, no, you're right. We haven't won in 16 games. It's just that period of the season where you don't win 16 games. That's all it is. Don't worry about it. It's fine. Yeah, absolutely bizarre when you look back at it. But you can't ignore the brilliant second half to the previous season that he was the manager for. And you can't ignore the great first half of this season that he was manager for. But his limitations were massively exposed in the second half of this season. And who knows what was really behind it. You know, I have my suspicions that, as I mentioned, it was fitness. I think a degree of inaction in January because things were going so well. I think you still need to do the right things in that window. Yes, we brought in Adebayor. Didn't work out. And as we mentioned, we brought in Randall Williams as well. But do you know what I mean? It's like you really, if we'd gone out and signed a couple of players of real quality there, you know, history could be very, very different. But there we go. So we've got to talk about it. The cup was obviously the focus. And the semi-final, Patrick, let's talk about the semi-final first, because you came over for that, didn't you?
Yeah,
the semi-final.
So I'd come over for the holidays because I hadn't seen my family in a while, so I had no plans to come back. But when Paris made the FA Cup semi-final, I had to come back. I mean, the opportunity was there to see Palace get to a cup final. So, flew over again, not with my son this time because he couldn't come over, he had school. So I came over and again met you guys at Wembley. Sat, four or five rows behind you, behind the Palace goal.
Yeah, can I just apologise? apologise. The semi-final was fine, and we'll get back to that. Can I just apologise? I think you saw me at the final as well when I was in a bit of a state.
That's okay. So you were, but I didn't want to bring that up. That
was fine. I was a proper mess that day. Okay. Apologies.
But so for the semi-final, we were in front of the HF, very, very close to them, actually. And they made that great thing where they had a lot of other fans there. And my abiding memory actually is Connor Wickham's goal, because when that ball comes across from Suarez, I knew it was going in right away, because the angle I had at the goal, I knew if he got above the Watford defender, the guy from Chelsea, Ake. I knew if he got above Ake, he'd score. And when he scores that goal, the place goes crazy. And it was one of the best things I've ever had to be at Wembley to see Palace get to a final. It was just a tremendous day. I mean, seeing you guys was great. Seeing other people I had not met before, but I met via Twitter that day was great. But just be there at Wembley to get us to the final was an absolutely fantastic, fantastic day. It really was great.
Yeah, our celebration was my profile pic for ages.
That was pretty funny.
We were so happy, weren't we, back then? We were just thinking about how happy we were just for that moment. Oh, dear. But, yeah, it was a great, great win. I think a special, special moment. But it's only special if you then go on and do something that gives you those memories for the rest of your life. And unfortunately, it is tarnished. We've got to admit it. And the worst thing, obviously, was the hope in the final, because I remember just the first half just kind of went in a blur for me. And I will say this now, I'd never watched the highlights back. And even in my notes, I wrote, I've never watched the highlights back. It still hurts too much and I never will. And then I immediately watched 4-minute highlights afterwards. I don't know what came over me. And I was angry for 2 days after writing this show plan. But you know, the blur of the first half went. And then obviously I didn't feel that Man United were playing particularly well. Clearly, we were getting annoyed at the refereeing, the Wickham incident in particular, where you worry, don't you, when you see, especially when you see the picture of Clattenburg with Alex Ferguson laughing and smiling before the game. Obviously, he was no longer their manager; it was Louis van Gaal. But you just think, things are stacked against us, and the decision to not allow Wickham to play on, and he finished brilliantly. And I don't believe for one second the defence were playing to the whistle at the time. That was bad. And you fear the worst at that time. But the big change was made, and Jason Puncheon comes on. And for just a few minutes, the cup was ours. It just felt like it was meant to be. Puncheon doesn't start, but scores the goal off, the ball comes back to him out wide, just absolutely slams it in. And just, we went mad. There were people staring at each other, tears in eyes, just everyone shaking their head going, surely not, because Man United hadn't done anything to make us think that they were going to come back into it. I'm just going to go misty-eyed while you speak.
Yeah, at that moment when Puncheon scores, because it's the end where we are at, I looked up through the hole in Wembley Stadium and I started to cry, because I actually thought I flew over again for this cup final and we're going to win the cup. And you have to tell me, was it 3 minutes before they scored? I don't even know how long it was. It doesn't even matter. But for those 2-3 minutes, I'm not kidding, I've never been happier as a Palace fan. And you have to understand the Palace ball. I've been in Palace ball for a very, very long time. And I've seen a few highs. I mean, 79, 80 is a big 94 promotion, the 1990 cup run, the ZDS cup, promotion to the Premier League, relegation, promotion, relegation, and then to promote this run now. But that feeling there for a Palace fan who's there, I mean, if you watch it on TV, it's different. To be there and be around people, like-minded people, a lot of them crying, and that emotion of that moment was absolutely fantastic. What I didn't see at the time, and I'm glad to see, was that stupid dance by Pardew. I never saw it. I didn't see it like going back to America. I never saw it. what it was about, didn't care. So I was so happy. But then once they tied the match, I was like, oh no. And then extra time comes. But I mean, for that moment though, it was one of the best things I've ever had in my life.
I was pretty lucky because I was absolutely hammered. I'd gone with my dad's social club is owned by a massive Palace fan. I think he owns a box. I'm with them. Luckily, drunk enough for it to. I mean, the goal went in. It was great, but the moment they equalised with that penalty, it never seemed like it was going to work out. And alcohol took the edge off it. I really didn't want to do this pod for discussing this game, really, because I've not got over it the same as Ham. I've never watched the highlights. I don't remember anything else about the game. And I'm happy to keep it that way, I think, to be honest.
Well, you remembered it was a penalty and it wasn't. So that's the first.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah, yeah. But for me, looking back at it and finally watching the highlights, obviously the Lingard winner is infuriating. But I don't want to say it was an amazing strike. But I mean, you know, he's swung a boot at it and it's gone in. So, and especially that it's him. It makes it all the more worse. But for me, the most frustrating thing was that nobody had the temerity or foresight just to smash Rooney to the ground when he was dribbling around four or five players. You just have to, you know, you take one for the team. And I don't know what was going on in the players' heads at that time, because it's exactly the sort of team that we were. We would throw our bodies at everything. And just for whatever reason, we just let him walk through. And yeah, terrific player, all that kind of stuff. I'm a big fan of Rooney, but not on that day. And it breaks my heart to watch that back. Not the extra time winner to the equaliser. It's just heartbreaking.
Yeah, but the two things that frustrate me as much as that, and I've definitely erased the goal, because again, if you remember, it was down the far end, and I tell you guys, when a goal is scored at Wembley, you get that delayed reaction. So I didn't hear the United fans cheer until maybe a second after the ball went hit the back of the net. So, but what frustrates me more is the red card to Smalling and not finding a way to capitalize on that. It was at 1-1. We were a man up at 1-1. And the fact that our manager couldn't find a way to change something up frustrated me. And then if you guys remember, Dwight Gayle had a couple of chances to score and missed chances. And that frustrated me, not because I'm mad at him, but because I loved him as a player. And I was really hoping that he could have, you know, gotten a goal, because if you guys remember Ian Wright coming under the sub in 90 and getting those two goals, I had that thought in my mind stupidly that maybe he'd be able to do the same similar thing. But those things stick out. The goal was a ridiculously good goal. And like I said, the only memory I have is that it really is him smashing it in the back of the net, Hennessy nowhere near it, and he couldn't have never saved that. And then this really strange delayed reaction, and then the crowd goes crazy. And if you remember, Chris, there were also United fans above and atop of us for some strange reason on our side, and they were going nuts. And I was like, "Piss off!" It was just really, really crazy. Really was.
Well, that's how angry Patrick is. He swore there.
Mike, you can beep that out, please. Sorry.
So we put an end to people suffering on this.
Yeah, I just want to make one last point, and that is the when you're walking away at the end of that, obviously I'm kind of still quite proud, obviously, the fact that we got to an FA Cup final. But the thing that probably got to me the most on the day was that it didn't really mean anything to the Man United fans. The majority of them, you know, in the celebration,
it meant nothing. He got sacked the same day.
Yeah. And walking out of the ground, when we were leaving, half of their fans were leaving. I said, why are you leaving? You should be, if we had won that cup, we'd have been in there for 5 hours. They'd have had to physically drag every Palace fan out of there. They just didn't care. And, you know, that's football's loss in a lot of ways, because, anyway, that's it.
I've got to speak on that. So as I'm leaving, I left before the presentation, by the way. I'm sorry if I'm a sportsport, but I couldn't watch them relay race the cup.
Yeah, me too.
I left early and I'm with there. I went with my friend Will Block again, flew over for the final. So we met after the game, and you're absolutely right. All I remember, and if you guys, I don't know what time you guys left the match, but even if you left early, you got stuck in a bloody crowd trying to get out of there. They kept blocking the way to Wembley Way up to the train station. But all I heard the Man United fans and right behind me was complaining about Van Gaal wanting him sacked. And you're right, Mike. He was sacked before the freaking match was basically over. It was ridiculous. And they could have cared less about winning the cup. It meant nothing to them. They are such a bunch of spoiled fans. It's unbelievable. And you're absolutely right. For Palace fans, we were gutted that we lost. It would have meant the world to me. I am not the kind of fan who wants to win every single year. That cup would have meant the world to me. To have actually said, I saw Palace win the FA Cup. We could have got relegated the next year, been in League Two now, I could care less. But you're right. Those fans were so spoiled. They could have cared one iota about winning that cup that year. It was so frustrating. We were all so upset and they couldn't have cared less. It was the worst. I hated that feeling watching those idiots up. It drove me nuts. We almost got into a fight with the Cup United fans because they were so like, oh, we don't care. We want him out. But I'm like, what are you joking? You just won the FA Cup. They couldn't care. It was awful. I hated that. I hated it. It was terrible.
Right, I need a whiskey now.
Look, let's never speak of it again. So I hope you enjoyed that and also shared in our pain at the end there. So obviously, if you want to get in touch and talk about anything we've discussed on the show or any mistakes that we've made, as some people like to talk about, do get in touch. Email is hi@backofthenest.com. Also, check out backofthenest.com for all articles and other bits and pieces. And of course, we'll be back fairly shortly with the next season, which is the 2016-17 season on Back of the Nest, the Palace Years.
Back of the Nest, the Palace Years.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport, powered by fans.